This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
My son's high school class is studying the Transcendentalists. So he came home with excerpts from Emerson's essay, Self-Reliance, and Thoreau's Walden. And we had some chance to read those together and discuss them. The Emerson essay was first published in 1841. Thoreau's Walden is 1854, and I think it's followed almost immediately by Whitman's Leaves of Grass, I believe 1855, just to be oriented. So Emerson was sort of the elder of that generation, although he was writing Self-Reliance and giving lectures and sermons, which I gather were not too easily distinguished, as they're not here either, in his 30s, the 1830s. And the spirit behind his talks is one that is in many ways very familiar to me and my generation. He grew up in a New England that was quite pious and conformist, and in most cultural ways still looking to the models of Europe, the classics. And his generation, he in particular, is interested in having their own experience, their new experience outside the boundaries of conformist society. In a way, I think that is very reminiscent of what happened in the 1950s when the Beat Generation emerged from a very conformistly preoccupied American society. Certainly figures like Thoreau and Whitman were quickly adopted by that generation as prototypes. Emerson's Self-Reliance gets summed up in his motto, "Trust thyself." Be grounded in your own experience. He says genius is the willingness and capacity to totally trust one's own experience. It's not that it's a special set of attributes, but it's that kind of courage to totally occupy your own ground, no matter what it is. And he says basically that if it you have to be honest about what your experience is and be able to say, "That's me." He says something, you know, like if somebody asks me, Well, how do you know that what's inside you comes from something higher rather than from something lower? He says, well, if it comes from something lower, so be it. Then I'll be the son of the devil, you know. But I'll be honest about it. I will ground myself in whatever my experience actually is. Very much an expression of the idea we hear in Zen of don't put anyone else's head on top of yours. And it's fairly clear that Emerson had had personal experiences of that we would call realizations that it really firmly gave him this grounding. It was not a theoretical or academic argument. It was a genuine expression of a sense of the unchallengeability of one's subjectivity. Now, someone like Thoreau took this in the direction certainly of nonconformity, but also in sort of the direction of autonomy, the fantasy of I will build myself a cabin in the woods and be as self-sufficient and as independent of society as humanly possible. I will live a simple, Spartan-like existence in contact with nature and not be contaminated by other people. He really emphasized the self and self-reliance. As we look back on these ideas, particularly from the perspective of our practice, I mean, what I would see is the way in which, first of all, Emerson is exhorting his audience to be self-reliant, and that the generation of people who are listening to him and reading him are dependent on his words in order to find themselves. Maybe something happened that he's able to, in a certain sense, pull himself up by his own bootstraps. But his whole role as a teacher and a mentor for a generation was to provide a model for self-reliance, to provide a language, a framework, a way of thinking and practicing that others could follow. It turns out that self-reliance may be something we need to learn from others. That's the paradox of it. It's the paradox of our practice as well, which we endeavor to be completely honest to our own experience, but that experience is not solitary and inner. It's co-created and constituted by our embeddedness in a practice, in a tradition, in a sangha that's not of our personal creation. It's something in which we participate in. And our participation is dependent on an acknowledgement of that interdependence. And Whitman wrote a song of myself, but the self that he sang was not private. His self contained multitudes, contained everything. So he broke out of a definition of a self that's very, in a way that's very different, I think, from Thoreau. It goes in the opposite direction from autonomy and into complete immersion and embeddedness. This was also the first generation that really had any access to translations of the wisdom literature of Hinduism and Buddhism. And like the generation in the 50s, they use these as a way to try to pry open the lid of a conservative Christian conformist society where they found themselves. They had no access to real practice, but they were able to use the first texts that were coming over, maybe some via Schopenhauer, to say there's an alternative way of thinking about the divine than the one that we are hearing about in the church every Sunday. So it was another case in which their ability to be independent was assisted or stimulated by getting the input from an outside tradition. Getting those texts was enormously enabling of them to begin to think independently, to begin to see that there's a way to think outside the box of the tradition that they grew up in, because they could start to do a little comparative cultural studies there. We look back at a generation like that, and it's remarkable how much they were able to understand and make happen for themselves with very, very little input. They genuinely did create for themselves a great deal that we have inherited and take for granted. We also are in the business of learning to trust ourselves, but the way to do that is often to study and learn from those who have gone before on the same path.